Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to the podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
What's wrong, dude? Why are you starting off so glum?
No reason. Just one of those off days, you know.
What's wrong? Did you watch your favorite team blow the game with 12 seconds left and then lose in double overtime?
Actually, no, they blew it with 13 seconds left.
Oh, my sweet Lord.
Dude. I know.
What?
I got a feeling there might be a little cursing on this podcast this week. I might have to bleep some stuff later.
I have to say, after the game was over, I thought to myself, you know what? There's no more fitting way for this team to go out. Like, of course they went out this way.
Yeah, you're right.
Of course they went out this way, dude. The most painful and hurtful way possible.
Right. The most agonizing thing you can imagine. They give up a goal, 13 seconds left on a blown icing call, and then they get
14 seconds, dude. I want to be really clear.
And then some massive fluky situation where no one on the ice knew where the puck was. And that's the season. Lay down, enjoy the golf.
Just sit there and watch the confetti fall to the ice.
Right. Yeah, that was not fun.
No.
Watching that.
It was fairly awful, especially for, you know, that you know, 15 minutes of time in the third period where I thought, I'm going to game six.
You
know what hurt the most, dude? Is not only was there no game six and the season's over, but the wife was scheduled to sing the anthem
for game six,
dude.
Oh, man.
And it stung a little bit extra because that would have been really exciting for her and for me. And bummer, dude. Extra double bummer, but we should be used to this by now, right? We bounce back real good, don't we, dude?
Yeah, I mean, this might be the day to wallow in it a little bit.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt that it feels terrible. And I don't think there's going to be an easy, quick recovery for the team or for the fans. It's been noticeably quiet on the blog, you know, and understandably so. Because I think we just don't know quite what to make of this situation. And I don't think today we're going to spend a lot of time breaking down what needs to change or what players should go and who needs to come in. I don't think that's what today's going to be about.
No, it's too early for that. We're going to have so much time. I mean, for those of you that are new to the podcast, we do this thing year round.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking in June. We're talking in July. We're talking in August.
You can't stop the rock.
You can't stop us. So there's going to be plenty of time to break all that stuff down. So now the thing is, you know, reactions to the series. How are we going to get past it? What does this mean? I know there's been, you know, different reactions to what this means for the team. You know, and we'll talk about like how do we frame this postseason in terms of achievement? Is this, you know, just a flat out utter complete failure? Is it you know, some signs for improvement that they got back to the conference finals? People like to mention the only team that made it to the conference finals 2 years in a row, you know, whoop-de-doo. how do we deal with this situation? I guess, I don't know. I mean, the fact that Joe was hurt, to me, was a bad sign from the beginning, and he was not as effective.
Well, and it wasn't even necessarily the separated shoulder that was giving him the most problems. And I guess in the end, I mean, did you see that he actually had a finger injury?
Really?
What he's going to need surgery on, at least. That's what was written, I think, in Working the Corners. Is it was some sort of description that he actually, I don't want to give wrong information out, but something about them having to put back on the tip of his finger or, you know, some sort of gruesome reanimator type story.
Oh, great.
Maybe I read it wrong, but he does have to have surgery on his finger. He does not have to have shoulder surgery. Ryan Clough's been playing with an injured shoulder that does also apparently need surgery the entire playoffs. So,
And there's the Damaris question, which you tweeted at Brody Brazil today, which I thought was really entertaining. You said, "Hey, Brody, we know what the injuries to Clough and Thornton are. What's the deal with Damaris?" And then Brody Brazil responded to your tweet saying, "Clough and Thornton have shoulder injuries."
Thanks, Brody.
Yeah, thanks, Brody. That's exactly what you asked.
There is no information on the Damaris injury. I don't know if he was being sarcastic.
Yeah, was that like a sarcastic
or,
answer?
I don't know.
It's hard to pick up the nuance from Twitter. You know what I mean?
I didn't find it particularly funny. So I don't know. If Brody's listening to us on his drive home on his way to golf.
I'm
doubtful.
Sure he is.
But I'm still waiting to find out what the deal's with that, because I think that's something during this series that we found particularly interesting was the absence of Damaris and the fact that he sort of declared himself in the media twice as being fit to play, and they didn't put him out there. Joe Thornton is playing with multiple injuries. Ryan Clough is playing with a shoulder that needs to be surgically repaired. Jason Damaris, what's wrong with him that he couldn't get out there on the ice, or that they didn't play him, you know?
Right. The unanswered question is the only thing wrong with him physical? Was there some other reason why they weren't playing him? You know, did he do something really bad in the last few games that the coaches didn't feel confident in his ability? We have no idea.
I can't see that is the reason. I thought he was pretty good, actually, in the first two rounds, and it's a pretty important part of the success of the defense, and for him to be just pulled, and for them to put Ken Huskins out there, who's a significant downgrade, and it's almost like McClellan copped to that in one of the pregame pressers saying,
right.
I mean, it seemed like he said, we want to have Damaris out here. It's just he's not ready, and so we're going with Huskins. You know, Damaris can play in all situations, and Huskins plays on, I think he put it, in a very limited sheet of ice. He's not able to do half the things that Damaris can do. So that hurt. You know, that's certainly not a reason why the series was lost, but that's a question, dude, that I'm still waiting for the answer on that. You know, what happened there?
Yeah, it was an interesting series. I mean, we saw a massive influx of Canucks fans into the tank for games 3 and 4.
Right.
And to be perfectly honest, I can't imagine a single other time we saw that many visiting fans at the tank.
No, not even a Detroit game. And it's usually Detroit is when
there's a lot of red with Detroit.
This was the biggest outpouring of support for a visiting team
ever
I've seen. Yeah.
Ever.
And downtown
was nuts.
Afterwards, I know that you have an email here from our friend John at Sharks Page.
Right.
Sort of talking about what happened after game 4, after the Canucks won. It seems like the Canucks sort of fans sort of took over the downtown area.
Yeah, he said, let me read it. He said, a couple bloggers and reporters complained that Canucks fans were turned away from bars downtown. Simple explanation. Have you seen Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas where they take either before they go to the circus but lost basic motor functions and couldn't make it past a turnstile? There were a number of similar Canucks fans trying to navigate downtown after the game. One had a Tiananmen Square moment in front of a bus. Ringside during the game, a large group of Canucks fans had drinks stacked 3 deep. About an hour or so after the final horn, a pair of Canucks fans on a pedicab trailed 2 flags and were cheered by Vancouver fans up and down West Santa Clara Street. Stopped in about 4 bars downtown, almost all Canucks fans. John says, not something you want to see as a Sharks fan, but it was an awesome display. Funny thing is even the most hammered Canadian fan is still extraordinarily polite. So that's a great story from John.
Yeah.
It was a weird situation. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's true. As far as visiting fans go, I mean, they were pretty well behaved. The only thing that kind of bugged me about it is, one, there were so many of them, obviously. Two, they all seem to be wearing brand new jerseys, which, you know, to me sort of signals bandwagonism. It's like, oh, now the Canucks are good.
Wait, I'm Canadian. Wait, my team's in town? I'm in.
I'm a Canucks fan now.
Right.
And third, way too many of them carried signs. Grown men carrying signs in the arena. I'm just not, you know, jury's out on that one. I'm inclined to say no.
No, especially if you're anywhere further than one row deep. And I'm sorry, you're right. A grown man carrying a sign, that should, you should be flogged and beaten.
Yeah, it's just not quite, it's just not that cool.
You don't need to.
And the funny thing is, we've seen Calgary.
I heart Heatley.
We've seen Calgary in town, and we haven't seen a bunch of Calgary fans invade the tank. Well, what do you think it is about Vancouver? Is it just proximity? Is it this
that might
built
have something
up
to do
emotion?
With it? It's hard to know whether or not a lot of these people were in from out of town.
Right.
I kind of got the feeling that there was a decent number of
them
that
I think
actually
so too.
Flew in. You know, Canada's hockey mad, like, much more than I think we could really ever comprehend.
But again, we've played Edmonton and Calgary in the playoffs.
But not in the conference finals, like, this type of situation, you know?
And I guess so.
We did play Calgary in the conference finals back in 2004.
The first time we played in the conference finals.
I don't remember it being like that.
Me either.
But I think Calgary... people who live there are just too cold to care about anything.
Well, also, I think the other thing is like Sharks fans, I think there might be a lot of pent-up anxiety and tension because the Canucks have never won a Stanley Cup like the Sharks. Canucks, I know that Calgary won in, what, 88? So, you know, Calgary's got a cup. I think there's a certain level of anxiety and tension that's reserved for fans of a team that's never won. I was talking to my, you know, Chris... a Red Wings fan in Sharks lands when we went to a Shark, one of the Detroit games, and I said, it's just not the same because if you lose the series, it's like, oh, well, we won the cup 2 years ago.
Right.
Big deal. And for us, it's like, we lose the cup. It's like, we still have nothing. I can't believe it. Jesus. You know, it's like, it's so annoying. And so I sort of get the feeling of that manic reaction from Canucks fans, you know, and I can only imagine the kind of meltdown that they will have if they end up losing in the Stanley Cup Finals to probably the Bruins, although we don't know that for sure yet. So I can, being the number one seed, best team in the NHL, yada, yada, there's all this anticipation, you know, leading up to what could be a historic disappointment.
I don't think they're going to lose. I think they're going to beat whoever it is that they get. They're just, they're too damn good, dude.
Yes, I agree.
We saw it ourselves, and they're completely resilient. They overcome obstacle after obstacle. This is a team of destiny, as EJ Raddick said on NHL Live today.
Really?
Yeah, he said he just thinks that this just is their year from beginning to end.
I think so too.
Everything is falling their way, dude. And for them to overcome injuries to Erhoff, no Manny Malhotra, Kessler basically playing on one leg for half the game.
Right.
And no Mikhail Samuelson, and they still beat the Sharks in five. That's ridiculous. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just, it sucks. It sucks for us, but I'm not going to take anything away from Vancouver beating us in five games. I mean, they clearly were the better team in the end. Dan Boyle, I think, would disagree with us based on his post-game press conferences. You know, he said that they, and as you would expect the Sharks to say, and I think as we felt in the moment, they were the better team. They played better in the last three games, you know, except for those moments of 5-on-3 in game four.
Yeah.
And game three, the Sharks were the better team for the majority of the game, except for near the end when they almost coughed it up. And for most of game five, the Sharks were the better team. But in the end, dude, you can fire all the shots on goal that you want. And I started getting annoyed at the Versus announcers more than normal. And they said, oh, the Sharks are just out shooting. It doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, how many of those, you know, Sharks shots were from, you know, all the way from the blue line, just harmless, unobstructed shots?
Right.
Half?
Yeah.
Half. Right. Who cares?
Right. Nobody cares.
Anyone could stop those. So tough stuff, dude.
It's a tough loss, and you're right. A lot of credit goes to Vancouver. I mean, you know, it's funny. I was, you know, another PTI reference here, but they were talking about, I don't know, some NBA game where, I don't know, the Thunder and Mavericks.
Yes.
And they lost some.
I watched that game.
They choked away like a big lead at the end, and they said, which was it? Did they choke the game away or did the Mavericks take it? And then Wilbon says, why does it have to be one or the other? And that's sort of how I feel about this series. Yeah, the Sharks missed some opportunities. They should have won. Obviously, they should have won last night. They could have won game four. So they missed opportunities, but you know what? If there wasn't a good team on the other side, those opportunities wouldn't have been taken by them. So yeah. Vancouver is a great team. They took advantage of the openings that the Sharks gave, but the Sharks certainly gave them opportunities that they shouldn't have.
Right.
So yeah. It's both.
Yeah, that's a perfect way to put it, dude. You know, the Sharks had the chance to win games in this series. And, you know, by the, you know, penalty parade in game four,
right,
when they had every opportunity on five power plays, you know, based on the, you know, the numbers up until that game, the Sharks were 40% on the power play coming into game four. They should have scored twice by those numbers. They should have scored twice. They didn't. They scored zero times, and then 5-on-3, 5-on-3, 5-on-3.
Game
goal,
over.
Goal, goal, goal. Yeah. Game over. And then it's over. And then last night, Sharks had a 5-on-3 early in the game. They can't score.
Right.
They can't score. And that's...
that's killer.
That's killer, man. Yeah. It's killer. It's just absolutely killer. And it doesn't help that the hockey gods, they... dude, I don't know how else to say it. They f***ing hate us.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
They just completely... they hate us, dude. Like, there's something, I don't know what has happened for the hockey gods to turn completely on the Sharks, but dude, just brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. It is. For the game to end like that, for the icing call to be blown, and then for the puck to just bounce off that stanchion and
go in a way that no one ever would have expected.
Like Kevin Bieksa, and for all six of the Sharks players on the ice to have no clue where it was. It's depressing. It was over so fast, dude.
Yeah.
That I was just stunned. I couldn't believe it. I didn't even know the puck had gone until the confetti cannons went off.
Yeah, no, I just sat there dumbfounded at the TV. You know, usually in that situation I would have been really sad. I would have been yelling and really upset, and I just sort of stared at the TV, and I just said, what the f*** just happened?
I
couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it.
Well, yeah. Dude, bottom line, two things went wrong for the Sharks in this series, and it was a theme of theirs throughout the playoffs. In the first two rounds, the Sharks took advantage of most of the opportunities that were given to them, and they won those series. In this series, they didn't. They didn't. Yeah. They lost.
Right.
And the second, and I think it will come to light, this is the biggest problem that I'm going to harp on over the next couple months, is the penalty kill was disgusting. Mm-hmm. And it was bad in the regular season, especially near the end. And in this series, it was disturbing. Like, it was... yeah. It was really super bad, dude. The penalty kill was 76.1%, which in the regular season, that would have made the Sharks the second worst in the entire NHL.
Wow.
And that's what their rate was in the playoffs. And you can't win the Stanley Cup with a 76% PK.
No.
You can't. You just can't. So
apparently Boston's going to try to do it with a 5% power play, but you can't do it with a 76% PK.
And for that reason, if they do make it to the finals, they're not going to beat the Canucks.
No,
they can't like that. It's not going to happen. And just sad.
It is really upset. I want to turn to some more Sharks page stuff. Cause
okay.
John had a series of tweets. Looks like last night, maybe he was,
John,
he was a little worked up.
At Sharks page was pretty fired up about, the end of the season. Maybe he had a few Jack and Cokes and started tweeting.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah. Read some of the highlights.
Okay. So let me just read a few in order. Most talented Sharks team I've ever seen, played hard for each other. No excuses. They let this postseason slip away. Something has to change. Other teams try to take every possible playoff advantage. San Jose does not. Franchise playoff record 76-82, OT record 15-17, playoff series record 13-14, elimination game record 13-16. In a big hockey market, we have to be honest with the assessment of the team. LA series was entertaining, not playoff hockey. Blown leads, struggle to close out Detroit, no composure against Vancouver. Whether it's personnel change in coaching technique, change in organizational philosophy, something needs to change. too much was given away by the Sharks in the playoffs this year. No excuses. So, dude, I guess, you know, we have several different ways for this to go. And like I said, we're not talking players. We're not talking contracts. We're not talking individual situations. But this is sort of a poll question for the week. And the first question is, you know, do you agree with John? Does there have to be a major change like that, a coaching technique, an organization philosophy? You know, is this kind of change needed? You know, and I guess I can say, one, you know, is that a big change? Two, is there some sort of retool situation here, which is, you know, I guess roughly analogous to what the Sharks did in the offseason last year? You know, they didn't add any big pieces, just kind of, you know, shuffled the deck chairs on the Titanic a little bit.
Right.
Or three, do we stand pat? And basically, I mean, as people know, that the core of this team's pretty well going to be, you know, stuck. I mean, we're gonna have Joe and Marlowe and Healy and some
right.
of these guys.
I mean, but basically, mainly, you know, above anything else, no movement and no trade clauses prohibit
right.
those the big four from moving anywhere.
So without talking about specific movements here and specific players coming in and out, I mean, what's the philosophy that you ascribe to here? Is this the big change philosophy, the retool philosophy, or stand pat?
God, dude, I hate to kind of sit on the fence on this,
dude.
Right now. I'm honestly not sure. If I had to pick a way to go right now, I think it's gonna be more like, I guess it's option B, which mm-hmm. is, you know, you're gonna keep the coach, you're not gonna fire Doug Wilson, the core of the players are gonna remain the same, and they're gonna continue to make some adjustments. You know, EJ Raddick, again, calling for an improved blue line for the Sharks. Mm-hmm. He said it was our undoing.
Mm-hmm.
The Vancouver blue line was far too mobile. I mean, do we have to, you know, in the coming weeks, take a look at, you know, our blue line again and go, you know, is Douglas Murray a liability? Or
right.
is he someone you keep? Do you improve on Nick Vallin? You know, where do you go? You know, a lot of these guys who are unrestricted, Eager, Nickel, guys like that, Mares, you know, are they coming back or not? Are you going to try and find better options? So I guess I'm going with B, dude. I don't think you can trot out the same thing. You got to do something a little bit different, but nothing drastic, I suppose. Although I do have one question for you later.
Okay, well, I might even go a little bit even more conservative with that. I think retool is about right, but even a minor retool is where I'm sitting, because you have to look at the competitive landscape here. And the fact is that Vancouver has three important defensemen all up unrestricted.
Right.
And so we're, you know, another reason for all this anxiety for the Vancouver fans, I would imagine, is because they are not going to have this team next year.
Right.
One way or another, they're not going to have it.
That's a good point.
And we just saw, neither is Detroit. Detroit just lost their number two defenseman, and their number one defenseman is 41 and contemplating retirement.
Right.
He will drop off at some point. Obviously, that slide has been a lot more gradual than anybody would have expected. But it's pretty obvious, or it's pretty likely, that the top the two other top teams in the Western Conference will have seriously diminished blue lines next year.
Right.
And if the Sharks can basically stay where they're at, hope for Demers to continue to grow, hope for Justin Braun to continue to grow, the Sharks may not have to make a quantum leap at the defensive position in order to hold tight with the rest of the West. So I might even go a little bit more, you know, conservative than even a retool. Just, you know, try to stick with the best of what you have. That's my philosophy at the moment.
Yeah, I it's hard to argue with that, dude. I mean, I think and without getting into too much specifics, one thing that I thought about this morning, and I look at, you know, the two players that have kind of plagued the Sharks in the last, you know, couple playoffs is, you know, Dave Boland and Ryan Kesler.
Right.
Do we have that player, that solid, I mean, besides Jumbo, is Joe Pavelski that guy, or is he so miscast as a third line center, which is what he is right now
mm-hmm.
on the Sharks? Is that, that's a question open-ended for the next several weeks. Is that the right player for that role?
Right.
Or not? I think that's something that the Sharks are going to have to consider when you're looking, and I'm not saying I don't like Joe Pavelski. I do. I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
And he's, and you know, did he come up big in this latest round? No. You know, I mean, he had a nice play, you know, to Seto at the end of, you know, on that second goal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, is he going to be that face-off specialist, defensive pest, and timely goal scorer year after year, like these other guys seem to be? I don't know. You know, just an open-ended question, dude. Right, dude, yeah. I'm looking at this here. I know you've mentioned this before. The Sharks blew the lead in the third period five times, you know.
Yeah, they gave up the tying goal, or they gave up the tie six times in the playoffs.
Wow. I only count five.
I have LA game six.
Yep.
Detroit 4, 5, and 6.
Ooh, 4, 5, and 6.
I think four, they gave up the tying goal in
yeah,
the third
you're,
period.
You're correct.
Vancouver game one and game five. Vancouver yep. actually has done it five times. None of them against the Sharks, of course, but they did it twice.
Damn it!
They did it twice to Chicago and three times to Nashville. Well, they still won some of those games, obviously. Yeah. Tampa Bay's only done it once. Right. They only did it to Washington in game two, and they ended up winning the game. So, and Boston's done it four times. So at first, I was expecting to say that the Sharks were by far and away the worst at this, but you know, it's playoff hockey. Teams come back. They're not head and shoulders worse than everybody else. They're worse than everybody else, but not as much as wide of a margin as I would have expected. So, of course, that's a big downfall of the Sharks this postseason, is you have a tie, you have a lead, you can't give it up, and the Sharks did many yeah. times. So, right. you know, that's a big part. I don't know if there's anything you can specifically do to the roster or to the coaching strategy to affect that. It's just, it happens, you know. Maybe because the team sucks no. and they need to make changes,
yeah.
or maybe just because it's just a fluky game and that's the way things go.
Like, going back to sort of the original thing that you opened the podcast with, that I don't think we really answered, is that, is this a failed season? Yeah, it is, because they didn't win the Stanley Cup.
That's right.
But is it an overall failure of a season? No, it's not. They
there's
made
good
the conference
takeaway.
Finals
there's
again.
Good takeaways.
You know, there's 26 other teams in the NHL that would kill to have, you know, cities would kill to have our team.
Right.
And, you know, are we still kind of the running joke of the NHL? Unfortunately, yes.
Yes. Yes,
but until they make the Stanley Cup Finals, that's what's going to happen. But I'd rather go to the conference finals again next year and lose than not make the playoffs.
That's true.
So, yeah. I don't think we should feel so awful that we're, you know, going to abandon ship and stop watching the team and, you know, or anything stupid like that. But
not that it's an excuse, but the fact is the Sharks likely will have both years lost to the eventual Stanley Cup champion.
True.
So it's not like they're losing to some team and then that team gets swept in the next round. You know,
right.
I mean, the Sharks are losing what appears to be the best teams,
right.
the very best.
Right.
They're and just not quite the best team yet.
Let's give out some of our postseason awards here, dude. We have three right. categories for our best postseason performers.
Okay.
We have the Igor Larionovs, dude.
Oh, nice.
Do we have any music for this?
We could. Let's see. What are we looking for? Maybe.
Okay, yeah, it's sufficiently dramatic.
Okay, good.
Dude, who would you give the best postseason performer award to, the Igor Larionov?
There's no doubt this year it's Joe Thornton.
Yeah.
Joe Thornton is the best player for the Sharks, and, you know, we talk a good takeaway from this year is there's no doubt Joe Thornton, who is the Sharks' best player, was the Sharks' best player in the playoffs, and that's a big bonus for the Sharks, right?
Yeah.
That question has been answered. Big Joe can come up big in the playoffs.
I totally agree with you. Joe Thornton has transformed himself as a player this year. Just isn't just a finesse guy anymore. He's become a complete defensive player, and he really silenced his critics and has become the captain of this team and the true face of the franchise too. You know, I don't think anybody can be disappointed in Big Joe. Who would you give your two runner-up awards to? I know one of mine has to be the guy who leads all defensemen in the NHL in points in the playoffs, which is Dan Boyle.
Yeah.
And Dan Boyle, 15 or 16 points in the playoffs this year. He's tops amongst all NHL defensemen. The guy is just a total warrior, and he's my favorite player, dude. And I know he is yours too.
He's like, my favorite player.
You can't help but love this guy, and I'm hoping we can get him some help back there
because he
deserves it. Who comes in third for you?
For me, it's Ian White.
That's mine too.
Because, you know, he's a guy never played in the playoffs before, you know, stuck on some Toronto, Calgary teams, didn't make it. And this guy, you know, he missed one game, but he still had 9 points in 17 games. I mean, this guy came up big in the playoffs. I mean, over a half a point a game for a defenseman is extremely good. This is a keeper, right? We're not going into playoffs and contracts, but I think I said a couple weeks ago, this is the Sharks' number one priority in the offseason, in my
opinion. Unfortunately, with his playoff performance, he may have priced himself out of staying on the team. Although he did say today in that he wants to stay.
Okay.
He made that very clear, although I remember Brian Campbell said that.
All right.
Dude, how about the Tom Pettersons? This is going to the worst playoff performers because Tom Pettersson is a career minus 20 for the Sharks in the playoffs. So who do you give your worst playoff performer to?
Fittingly, I'm going to give it to a player that is tied for the worst plus minus on the team, and that's unfortunately Scott Nichol. I was not happy with Scott Nichol's play this offseason, or this postseason. I, you know, he seemed to be healthy scratch. This is not a guy that should be a healthy scratch.
No.
For the Sharks. And maybe he's a good face-off man, but he at least was supposed to provide some energy, some penalty killing, maybe some key offensive contributions. He didn't seem to do any of that, and he was just a flat-out massive liability in several games. And you can't have that. I mean, the fourth line was a problem in the first couple rounds, and unfortunately, Scott Nichol, as much as I liked him during the regular season, was a big part of that. So Scott Nichol is getting... I'm not happy about it, but he gets my worst... he gets my Tom Pettersson award.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we've seen the last of Scott Nichol do. I'm going to give my worst and biggest playoff disappointment to the Sharks' highest-paid player, Danny Heatley.
Yeah.
You know, he finally showed up last night and seemed to be everywhere. You know, unfortunately, none of those shots went in, but he had his best game of the playoffs last night.
Right.
But, you know, this guy, in how many playoff games we play? 18. He had zero multi-point games in 18 games, and he scored one goal in the final two rounds.
Yeah.
That is piss poor, unexcusably lame,
right,
for a guy who's supposed to be one of the elite snipers in the NHL, and he's being paid to be that. $7.5 million. We can all talk about maybe in a perfect world you'd like to move that contract, but I don't even think people need to email us about it. It's not happening.
No. It's not happening.
He's and we both know he is a way better player than what he showed this year. But it doesn't excuse the fact that, you know, Danny Heatley has 4 or 5 goals in this series, like he should. We might be talking about Game 6 right now.
We might be.
Dude, I've got to say my third worst, my Tom Pettersson.
Uh-huh.
It's got to go to Ben Eager.
Yeah.
Ben Eager counted on to be a playoff presence. He was brought here for his Stanley Cup experience, his effectiveness last year. I remember watching him in the finals. He was very effective. He completely lost his mind.
Yes.
In the playoffs, and he was a liability. He was awful against LA, and he was so distracting in this series. He couldn't even get on the ice for the last 3 games. Ben Eager.
Yep.
Gets a Tom Pettersson.
Okay.
How about the Marcus Ragnarssons, dude? This is a player that you are, you're not sure whether to praise them,
right,
or to put them in the Pettersons. You're just really on the fence about their contributions in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Hamburgers.
Oh.
I'm going hamburgers.
Okay.
Not bad, especially since we had Ken Huskins to compare him to, who was... I can't put Huskins in the running for the Tom Pettersson Award since he only played 5 games, and he didn't play for the last 2 months. So I got to give the guy some benefit of the doubt. Vallin wasn't terrible. Wasn't great. Wasn't terrible. This is sort of, I guess, you know, this is another big question. He's another unrestricted free agent. The question is, will he be retained? What kind of contract can he expect?
What sort of bloated contract will he get?
Well, I mean, that's something that we'll talk about in future weeks. But yeah. Vallin was... a guy that you almost never noticed. So for that, he gets my Marcus Ragnarsson Award.
I'm giving my Marcus Ragnarsson Award to the guy between the pipes, Antti Niemi.
Yeah, that's a good call.
You know, can't say he was great in the playoffs. Can't say he was bad. I don't know if his stats are truly fair to, you know, his contributions. He had a couple really bad games early, and he had a terrible game in game two where I think we blamed him for one of those seven goals.
Right.
But he's the only netminder left out of the four that are in the conference finals that didn't have a shutout.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He didn't steal the game. And
No goalie steals.
He brought in here to be a difference maker.
And he wasn't.
And he wasn't. Yeah. He wasn't. We got this far with Nabby last year, you know? And
right.
And here we are again, and we got one game further, and I don't know if it really had much to do with him. You know, 3-2-2 goals allowed and
896.
896 save percentage gets most people sent to the American Hockey League.
Yeah.
Not saying he should be, but... You know, even strength, his save percentage was 912.
That's good.
Shorthanded, his save percentage was 813. Okay?
Yeah.
He faced the most power play shots of anyone so far in the playoffs with 96. That's not fair. That's not fair to him, you know?
Right.
That means the D is doing a real crap job.
Right.
Of protecting
PK.
Him. PK was bad. Niemi, Ragnarsson.
All right, dude. Well, that's a good way of summing up the playoffs, dude. There's some goods, some bads, and some indifference there.
So we've got the poll question. We want to hear from you before we return. We're going to take a good solid week off here.
Right.
And we will be back. We want to hear from you. Send us your tweets, your questions, once you've healed,
right.
Once you've had an emotional moment, once you've gotten over the Oprah finale.
Yes, of
please.
Course.
The ugly cry. Once you've got the ugly cry out, join us as we continue to look an eye towards the future, dude. I think you make a really good point today that, you know, Vancouver next year, there's going to be a step down. We saw what happened with Chicago this year. You know, you make a strong case for the Sharks trying to suck it up one more year.
Yeah.
Joe said it today in his press conference. He said, it's not like I'm, you know, Couture and I are going to start getting worse. We're still going to be here.
Yeah.
And we're going to come back. You know, this is a good hockey team.
Yeah.
And they lost to a better team, too.
Right. And there's still going to be good hockey left. Don't stop watching hockey. I'm going to be watching Bruins. I'm going to be watching the Stanley Cup Finals. Oh, you're done? Please.
Dude, I can't think of a better way to end it. By presenting you with our 2011-2012 season ticket renewal, dude.
Because this is what I want to be thinking about.
The deposit is due on Friday. I'm sure all Sharks fans are really looking forward to writing that huge check. And if they could go back in time and take it back, they might reverse the timing of this right now.
Yeah.
But...
So I get to pay money now.
Yeah.
Right after they lose.
Pay good hoard cash money. Dude.
Yeah. Well, I'm re-upping again.
Well, of course. We're coming back.
We're coming back.
You know, if the Sharks were in last place, we'd probably come back because we just love hockey. And we love the Sharks, and we hope you still do too. And we'll talk to you next week.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.